Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today, he is the co-host of the YouTube podcast series Date Night, and he was also born an hour before me, my twin brother, John Abaya.
Hey, Ben.
Yes. Then returning to our podcast, she's the author of the Book of Awesome Black Americans. She is also the founder of Just Add Color at thecolorwebmag.com. She also written for Shadow and Act, Sci-Fi, Wire, Slash Film, and Mediaversity. Please welcome back Monique Jones.
Hello, guys.
Hello, welcome back. Then also returning is he's also a co-host of the Get Out the Room podcast. And I believe he's also, I'm assuming, the greatest American hero. Please welcome back Tony Colson.
Hey, I like the first one. A little hip hop on that one. I like returning. Yes. Let's drop those G's.
Yes. So if you're new to the podcast, we usually give our impressions of the things we watched, listened, played, and read throughout the week. And we ended with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is HBO's Lovecraft Country. But first, before all of that, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer is fresh from the DC fandom. This past weekend, they had like their little convention via Zoom, I guess you could say. But it's all, I would think it was on a Zoom call. Not Zoom call, but you guys know what I'm talking about. But this week's trailer is The Batman.
Please do not lie. What is the price for your blind eye?
The hell are you supposed to be?
I'm vengeance.
That is a clip from The Batman, directed and co-written by Matt Reeves, starring Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne, Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle, Paul Dano as Edward Nashton, and Jeffrey Wright as a detective, James Gordon. From IMDb, there is actually no plot at the moment, it says on IMDb, but from what I've picked from Matt Reeves' interviews, he said he cited the Batman comic book The Long Halloween, and he also was influenced by Roman Polanski's Chinatown. So it's a very detective heavy film, it seems like. And from what I've also read, that he scrapped Ben Affleck's Batman film that he was supposed to direct, Ben Affleck, so he started all new with new plot and new stories. So that's actually kind of interesting to see, to learn about. But yeah, John, I'll ask you first. What's your thoughts about the new trailer? And are you a big Batman fan?
I'm a fan of Batman. I like the character. I like all the iterations of the character that in the last 5 years, I guess you can say, but Affleck and the Lego movie, and now Patterson's doing Batman. I like Matt Reeves a lot. I like the Planet of the Apes movies that he did in the past. So I believe he can do action well. I'm looking forward to this film a lot. Just another take on Batman, I guess. I mean, it's a younger version of Batman I'm used to. I don't know how old like the portrayal of like Keaton and Bale. To me, they're always like over 30. And I don't know how old is Pattinson.
I think he is over 30.
He's over 30. The way they're portraying him looks young. Maybe because the haircut or whatnot. It looks like a year one Batman, or within after a year or whatever. Like he doesn't seem like, you know, he knows he has a rogues gallery or whatnot. But it seems like this is a first for him, like a first real threat, like a serial killer. I'm assuming it's the Riddler, with all the question marks and throughout the whole trailer. And yeah, I'm looking forward. I really like how they showed Selina Kyle in it, and just like a glimpse of how, and her like little bat ears. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, the mask and whatnot. And yeah, it looks like, to me, it looks like straight up like a Seven type film where like there's a mystery, people are dying, and Batman's there to use his detective skill. So I'm looking forward to that.
You were mentioning Year One. I think Matt Reeves, prior to the trailer's release, he actually kind of said that it was not based on anything, but it was his second year as Batman.
Okay, yeah. It looks like
so
it.
He
looks like he knows Commissioner Gordon, and Commissioner Gordon trusts him. And it's played by Jeffrey Wright. That's really good. Cool to see him. He looks like just a Commissioner Gordon that we're used to. But yeah, they show like a scene of, I don't recall who was it. I think it's Jeffrey Wright like pushing Batman, and a whole bunch of cops like going back, like, oh, what's happening? Like that situation inside looks like an integration room. Ah, same words, weird. But yeah, it looks good.
Cool. How about you, Tony? Are you like a huge fan of Batman, and what's your take on this interpretation of Batman?
Definitely a fan of Batman. Have been for a very long time. The way that the teaser struck me, I love what they're doing with it. Love what Zoe is as a Selina Kyle, Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. Inspired choice. Big fan of Matt Reeves, but love almost everything he's done. But I did not like what I saw here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. You know, the tone, again, I love everything, but this is like if you're in the kitchen, you're cooking, and you use the best ingredients, and it's wonderful and amazing, and then you eat the meal, and it's not good. Like, that's what I feel like. We had caviar and shallots and champagne and butter, and it just is tasting like dog food. I didn't like what I saw at all. I don't buy Pattinson as Batman, which I'm surprised, because I was actually looking forward to this pick. I thought it was going to be, pleasantly surprised as opposed to disappointed. I don't buy him as Batman, and I don't buy him as Bruce Wayne either. Usually they get one right and the other wrong. Rarely do they get both right. They got both wrong for me. So this could be completely fixed. I see more trailers that show me something a little bit better, but again, you know, Batman's a physically imposing dude. He's like 6'4", 250 mm-hmm. pounds. Pattinson, I feel like I could whoop his butt. Like, I'm not impressed, you know. And then Bruce Wayne is this suave, uber charming, very handsome guy. I see Pattinson in the teaser trailer with like limp hair and oily skin. I'm like, that's Gotham's best. Like, yeah. Nothing about this impresses me. So, again, I hope it all turns out differently. But so far, you know, hated it.
That's what I was saying, too. Like, he looks like a kid. Like, that's why I was like, I'm not sure how old is he in this universe they're doing. But he looks like he is beginning to be Batman, not like established, like, you know.
So he hasn't been lifting the weights
yet. Yes.
I mean, I don't know how you grow into being. I mean, he looks, what's Pattinson, like 5'10", 5'11", maybe?
I think so, yeah. I think he's a tall dude in standards, but I don't know how tall is he.
Yeah, he looks a smooth 175. Like, I don't, age does not add that kind of bulk to your frame. He's not suddenly going to be 6'3" and 220 in 3 years. It's not going to happen. Yeah. So I'm not feeling it so far.
And it's also rumored that this film is going to be rated R. So that's a thing. That's a different take of the past Batman films, where with Nolan and in some degree with Zack Snyder, Justice League, they try to lower it to like PG-13, like so kids could watch it. So it will be interesting, like where kids have to have their parents with them this time around to watch a Batman film. So
I like Monique, that. Just briefly, I like that. I think that's a great idea for an R-rated Batman. Again, I like everything about this, but what I saw. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see in the future, like, what else they're going to release. How about you, Monique? Go on.
I actually kind of liked what I saw. I mean, I think I'm liking it because I know Matt Reeves is behind it, and I like his Planet of the Apes movies. As a huge Planet of the Apes fan of both the originals and these new ones, not the Tim Burton one, but these new ones, I really like that he respected the source material and really added to the source material instead of trying to like start from scratch and like make a whole new thing and mess it up. So I am hoping that he's, you know, doing the same kind of respect with this movie. I did have a friend I was talking to who asked me if I had seen it. I did ask, well, he asked me what did I think, and I said I kind of liked it, and so he said that he thought that it seemed like Arkham Asylum, the game.
Okay, that's interesting.
And so he didn't like it for that reason.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that is a, whoa.
I would think, yeah.
I mean, I can see, like, where there's, like, some Arkham Asylum-ish type things, like, especially with, like, bone breaking and stuff. Like, Batman usually doesn't, we don't usually think of Batman as, like, breaking people's bones and, like, punching them in the face till they bleed and all that stuff. But,
and he's like, I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him.
That's the type right. And so I see that. But overall, I think that I'm hopeful, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm hopeful, and I'm really interested in seeing how Jeffrey Wright and Zoe Kravitz are going to do. Like, that's one of the main reasons why I'm interested in this movie, is just to see how this type of cast is going to interpret Batman.
I'm on the same, I think I'm in between everyone, where I think I like some of the ideas with what Matt Reeves is doing, especially like with the choice of like Zoe Kravitz as like Catwoman. I think there was like a really glimpse, a cool like frame shot of her ears, even though she's just wearing like a mask, a regular mask, like a burglar would wear. But I like that the like show that part of like back of her head and whatnot. That I thought that was like a cool shot. And then I'm actually interested in Paul Dano's The Riddler. Like he, you know, he's the Riddler in this one, and just seeing films like he's in, what's that? What the Prisoners or
Little Miss Sunshine?
There will no, not that one. That's I feel like that was different. But like, There Will Be Blood, where, you know, he plays like the twin brother. I forget what's his name, but the other twin he plays, where he's kind of sadistic and whatnot. So it's interesting to have him as a choice. I believe in like Matt Reeves, and like I really love his the Planet of the Apes films, and really interested to see how they're like. I think it's the third film, I forgot, it's called War of the Planet of the Apes, he did, where I got a hint that he could probably do like a superhero film really well with the action that was involved in all his films. So this is actually, I probably thought this was actually a great way for him to get into the the superhero world of comic book movies and whatnot. He hasn't done one, right, in the past? I don't think he has. I try to think of all the films he's done. Other than that, I really do like the noir take, the detective take on this. And I actually want to see him do the detective work in this. I know we got subtle hints in there with Nolan's film where he does some detective work, but I want to see him actually just out of the bat suit, him as like Bruce Wayne doing detective work, or, you know, sneak around the corners and whatnot. But yeah, other than that, I actually like the part where they in the trailer, when he is like fighting a bunch of this gang of like clown makeup. I don't know if that's a hint to the Joker's with the gang or whatever, but where they kind of subverts your expectation of him saying I'm Batman, but instead he says I'm Vengeance. I thought that was a cool line and whatnot. As for Robert Pattinson, I'm on the same. I actually like Robert Pattinson. I want to see him try to take this role. I liked him in his other films, like Good Time and The Lighthouse. So I wonder. We don't actually get to hear him play the Batman voice here yet, huh? I don't think they hinted that. Did they?
He kind of does something like a brooding or, you know, dark voice. I don't know what you call that. Gritty voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they haven't hinted yet what's his take. I know when Christian Bale did his take, a lot of people weren't real fans with that one. But yeah, we'll see. I think this is coming. I actually like the idea that we don't know when this is going to come out. I mean, presumably it's next year, but because of the pandemic, we really don't know.
You mean those question marks? You think we come out like 2031 or something?
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of cool, using the the Riddler's marks on there. So it's coming out next year sometime. So we're looking forward to that. So we're going to go move on to what we've been doing this past week. I'm actually going to start with Monique. What have you been doing this past week?
What I've been doing this past week is I've watched a movie called A Shot Through the Wall, starring Kenny Liu and Fiona Fu and Sai Ma from, the latter two are from Tiger Tail on Netflix. That same friend I was talking to about the Batman told me about that film because he knows some of the people in that movie. And so I watched that film and I thought it was really great. I thought it had a really interesting perspective. It's based around the story of Peter Liang, who used to be a cop before he was arrested for accidentally shooting Akai Gurley, who was an unarmed, innocent black man. And so I think he's currently serving time for that. But the story is basically taking a fictional Chinese-American cop in New York. He accidentally shoots through a wall in a apartment complex on pursuit of what he and his partner think is a suspect. And he accidentally shoots a man, a mother's son, in his own home. So the movie takes a really interesting look at race relations, how everything can get so turned around into destruction and chaos just by pulling out your gun at the wrong time and thinking that someone is a suspect when they're not. Basically everything that we've been dealing with this year and for so many years. And I just thought it was really a really interesting film that covered that type of information. I think it's currently seeking distribution. So it's not, I don't know if it's like available anywhere right now, but it was recently at a at the Bentonville Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
So hopefully it can find distribution sometime soon.
Did you watch it? You know how like some film festivals are now online because of the pandemic. Did you watch it through there? Like,
online? Yeah.
Okay. I've heard about this because I think it's the director Amy Long, and then I was interested because of what they're going to tackle on this film. So that's kind of interesting. That I want to watch it and see if they find a distributor. Do you think that it captured that moment well, in a sense of like, because it's mostly the point of view of the cop, right? Or is it multiple point of views?
It's mostly the point of view of the cop.
Okay.
But we do get some insight into how the mother of the victim is handling the situation. But it's mostly about the cop and his family and how they are dealing with the tragedy and how it's affected their family. The cop, the main character, has a black girlfriend, so we see how she's dealing with it as well and how it impacts their relationship.
Oh, that's actually more interesting, because I don't know if Peter Lang had a black girlfriend. So
I don't
think so. Okay. No, that is actually interesting. It reminds me sort of, I don't know if you guys watch Fruitvale Station, Oscar Grant, but that was more in the same, on Oscar Grant's point of view than the cop. So, so I'm looking actually forward to it. Hopefully it gets distributed and then we could watch it sometime next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's A Shot Through the Wall. Cool. Tony, what have you been doing this past week?
I have a buddy of mine on the podcast, Scott, who's been telling me about Doom Patrol forever. And just decided to start watching it this week. And just as a little bit of background, Doom Patrol is it's a live action show based off of an old DC comic book. Very similar setup to X-Men. You have an older mentor figure who's bound to a wheelchair. You have a Scooby gang full of mutants and misfits and freaks of different assortment of of powers, and you know they fight crime. That's the basic premise. And it actually predates X-Men, which is kind of interesting. But it's just so weird. It is. I watch a lot of weird stuff. This is the weirdest thing I've seen by a long shot.
Have you only watched first season, or you continue all
the way? I killed the whole thing. Okay. I could not stop watching.
So I'm a huge fan of Doom.
Oh, are you?
Yes. Of the comic book and the show, both of them.
I love this show. I had no idea. I actually told my friend Scott off. So I was like, dude, you should have told me that this was this good because I would have watched it sooner. Mm-hmm. But it really almost defies explanation, but I would just a big recommend for me. Weird, funny, heartwarming, heartbreaking, dark yeah. comedy, and sometimes just super silly too. It's a little bit of everything. Love it. I can't wait for season 3.
It's a lot like meta too in the first season with what's his name, Alan Tudyk's character. I was like, what are they doing with this show?
Yeah. When I saw the casting, I was like, what? He's the villain? Yeah. Come on. But he pulls it off.
Yep, yeah.
You know, he pulls it off. They've got Booger from Revenge of the Nerds playing another smaller, heavy. Like, the casting in this is insane. But I love it. It's so good. It's so good. I want everybody to watch it because I need season 3.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard good things from my brother about this, and I'm planning to watch it. I think I just don't have time. But I remember watching the first episode. I think we talked about this in the past, where that first episode was so weird from coming from like a comic book television show. This is actually kind of different from anything I've watched before. So yeah,
did you watch it on media? I'm telling you, it's good. Like, you have some dead weight in your schedule somewhere. Find it. Yes, yeah. Watch this. It's important.
I think that's on HBO Max, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it got transferred, yeah. Because I used to watch it on DC Universe, but then all of a sudden all the episodes transferred to HBO Max. So I was like, okay, that's good. More people can watch it.
So that's Doom Patrol on HBO Max. I think you can stream it. Season 1 and 2 on there. Cool.
Correct.
John, how about you? What's your what have you been?
Oh, leading into doing? Another DC property. I'm currently reading a comic book series. It's still an ongoing one, but I just want more people to read this. It's called Strange Adventures. It's written by Tom King, and the art is by Mitch Gerald. So going into this, I'm a fan of Tom King's books. Basically, he did Mr. Miracle. Or not Mr. Miracle. What's his name? From DC. DC. Or not DC. Vision. Vision. Sorry. He did Vision Marvel's Vision. And then DC, he did Mr. Miracle. That's the way. So he's doing this one, Strange Adventures, about Adam Strange. So going in, I had no idea who's Adam Strange. So he's a new character to me. Basically, the first issue basically tells the story of him releasing a book, or what do you call that, about like your adventures or whatever. It's like a point of view of your adventures and whatnot. So during like a book signing, a person called him like a war criminal because he fought in this war called on this planet called Ran. And then in the series, it basically does a breakdown of like a small investigation. Was he a war criminal at this planet? And it goes like flashbacks for during the war and in the future. And during this investigation, the Justice League actually calls the investigation because they're like, oh yeah, he's a hero, but is he really a hero on this planet? And the cool part is they do this like scene. It's a minor spoiler, but they ask Batman, to do the investigation. You know, he's the greatest detective in the world, but he actually refused to do it, and actually they give it to a different hero named Mr. Terrific. So I'm new to Mr. Terrific, and when they showed that, I had to, in the last panel they actually showed his arm reaching into Adam Strange, and it showed he wears this coat that says Terrific on it, like just, you know, like a jersey, not jersey, like what do you call those coats, like leather coats?
Letterman
jackets, like, and it just says Terrific on it. I was like, who the hell is this guy? So I did research. I was like, man, this guy's good. Like the power of him, and not even a power, like he's just a smart character in the DC universe. But yeah, I'm reading that right now, and just see it tricked me thinking it's an Adam Strange book, but it's actually like going into more Mr. Terrific and what his power and how. You know, well, he's one of the best detectives, basically, in the DC universe that I never knew about. That I was like really shocked, and I can see why Tom King picked Adam Strange and Mr. Terrific. He does a good job of like bringing in Vision and Mr. Miracle of these like not as well known in the grander universe in both Marvel and DC, but he does a great job like fleshing out the character and all the, you know, the mistakes the characters have done and really showing you like not everything's black and white. There's like a huge gray area, especially in Adam Strange that we're seeing. And yeah, I just want more people to read it and just support the comic book there.
I think you gave me like the Mr. You allowed me to borrow the Mr. Miracle comic book, novel. And that was a really cool, like, it's nothing that I've ever read too, and I really, really like that. So I'm actually looking forward to this one.
Yeah, after this, I'm trying to find like good Mr. Terrific stories now. Like it brought me like into a different path. Like I thought I would like research Adam Strange, but I was like, Mr. Terrific is great. Like, I just needed more stories about him.
Cool. So that is Stranger, wait, what was the name of that?
Strange Adventures.
Strange Adventure. I was thinking of Stranger Things at one point. Cool. So anyone could just pick that up right now.
I mean, it's $5.
Yeah. So lastly, what I've been doing this past week, my wife and I binge a show, television show, on Apple TV Plus. I think that's what the service is called. but it is titled Dear. It is actually a show. I think they produced, Apple TV produced it. And it's basically, the show is like an inventive take on like the biopic, but it's reduced to like 30 minutes. And what's new, like what makes it unique is in between the person's stories, they actually have people read letters. And these letters are read by people who were like inspired by that person that like changed the industry. I think there's 10 episodes. On top of my head, like there's like Spike Lee, Oprah, Lin-Manuel Miranda. I'm trying to think of other people right now, but basically, like the Spike Lee episode is like the first episode where he goes to his filmography, at least the films that basically like change the industry, like Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X, and whatnot. And then in between, when he talks about them, he will read these letters that were inspired by those films that I think in Malcolm, I want to say, or, oh, which film was it? It's not Malcolm X. He Got Game. That was the film. It is, the letter is read by a person, I won't say, but she is from the WNBA and how is she inspired by that film itself. And I was like, oh, that's a, and then it's not like because of basketball, because of the father figure in He Got Game. So that's an interesting, it's very, at least they read at least four letters in the show for each person. It does get teary-eyed. You do get, you know, you need some tissue there. But also it's very inspirational. Like some of these stories are from people from like, you know, from small towns and whatnot. These letters are from people from small towns. And when you find out who they became and how they were inspired by these prolific figures, in like whether it's in the film industry or sports, or even as small as like someone as being like an activist, it's really really good episodes there. So that is Dear. Have any of you watched or heard about this actually?
No.
I haven't heard about it yet.
Cool. Yeah, I really recommend it. I think it's created by RJ Cutler, who is like this filmmaker documentarian. I actually never watched any of his films in the past, but yeah, it's very well like produced too. So yeah, that's Dear on Apple TV Plus, and I think there's 10 episodes. So moving on, as we're gonna go to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is Lovecraft Country.
The American Dream depends on the question: what is reality? What is reality?
That is a clip from the, I think, trailer of Lovecraft Country. It's based on the 2006 novel by Matt Ruff. It's the showrunner is Misha Green, best one known for the television show Underground. It's starring Jonathan Majors, Journey Somollet, Courtney B. Vance, and I don't want to. I don't think I could pronounce her name really well, but Ajanun Elise or Ellis, is that how you pronounce her name? I believe so. Ellis, yes. She is the mother, or she is the wife of Courtney B. Vance's character. So on IMDb, this is the plot synopsis. A young African-American travels across the U.S. in the 1950s in search of his missing father. I think we did a trailer talk of this, and then I always thought they buried like the lead in the premise there, because I don't think they tell you like exactly what it's all about. I just want to ask actually Monique, because you did a really well piece on your website, and I want you I want to know your thoughts about it and whatnot.
Well, I think the series has the same potential as Misha Green's other series, Underground, and HBO's recent hit Watchmen, to really redefine how people view and talk about the Black experience in America. I feel like putting it in the lens of like a genre show really changes the game, for me at least, with where you can go with showcasing how these real life issues can be, I don't want to say it, I guess how you can like use genre television to teach real life to audience members who might not know about a lot of the history of America, or, you know, might not be aware of what's actually going on around them. I think, for instance, the fact that the show has so much influence from Black art, such as Gordon Parks, who I actually did feature in my book. He went around the country, well, particularly the segregated South, taking photos for Life magazine about what life was like for Black Southerners. And there are several scenes in the pilot episode that reference his photography. And I thought that was really exciting to see that there's things in the episodes that people can go back and learn about real history and the people that captured that history. I also think that it's a great show that teaches a lot of lessons about racism and how racism works as a system in America. We typically think that racism only affects the minorities, which it does, clearly it does, but it also, I think the show also showcases how that same racist system that's supposed to quote unquote protect white Americans also hinders them as well, because as we see in the show, while the Black people are being victimized by the racist sheriffs and stuff, the racist sheriffs are the ones that become the monsters because of where they are in whatever Lovecraft Country means in this show, but also just because America is as racist as one of Lovecraft's books. And so it's like the same system that they're upholding is the system that's turning them into monsters in this story. So I think it's a sly way of showing audience members that even if you think that this system doesn't affect you, and if you think you have privilege, it still affects you. You just don't know how, and you need to realize that it does affect you. And once you realize it, then you have the power to end it.
Yeah, I think your piece really highlights a lot of what is the Black experience, especially in the 1950s, and how that affects actually today, in a sense. I really love that piece, and I really recommend people read it from your website. And you also did another one, which is the Easter eggs. And I think you hinted about like Gordon Parks' photography. His imagery was inspired by several of the frame shots in the show. As a like aspiring photographer myself, I'm a huge fan of Gordon Parks. And when they show those images, I really immediately knew like that was from him, just because they were so well known among like photographers. And if listeners don't know who Gordon Parks is, there's a famous, I think one of his famous photographs that's always been duplicated. When it comes to the shot is the Great Day in Harlem, where he took dozens and dozens of like jazz musicians, and then he shot this in a during like the summer in Harlem. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to point out, and also I really love those shots in the show. So, Tony, what's your thoughts about this first episode of Lovecraft Country?
So opposed to how I felt about Batman teaser, I loved this. Loved it. Big horror guy, as some of the folks who have heard me guest here before know. It would be a bit of an understatement. Have read all of Lovecraft and have loved it. And the challenge with Lovecraft is... the monsters therein sort of defy explanation. It's just something when you read, it's a hard thing to conjure in your mind. And somehow or another, they nailed this. You know, they nailed this from a visual standpoint. Outside of a visual standpoint, from the themes that they're addressing here, the kind of terror that Black folks can feel when confronted with authority, when tailed by the police, all the kinds of things that we have to do. That there's a scene, and I don't want to give too much away, where our protagonists are placed in a very high pressure situation, an unwinnable situation that they then win, only to realize they had lost before they even started. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real thing. You know, and it's a wonderful trick that they do here, where they take you, following that same situation, where they take you into a place where you are filled with dread and terror, and then somehow manage to ratchet it up a notch. And there's this constant, toggling between, the real monsters and the magic monsters. You know, the real monsters and the magic monsters. And I found that just terrifying, you know, to be beset upon all sides by monsters real and imagined. You know, it's terrifying. You know, you're fighting a war on two fronts. You're keeping the things at the door because you're afraid to let anything in, and then also what's in the room with you is terrifying as well. You're under constant threat. Often when the stakes are this high, you can come into sort of like a terror fatigue where it's just too much, you know. But that doesn't happen here. And I really feel like this was just masterfully done. I cannot wait to see what they do with the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you with the way they balance the terror from like the, like you said, like magical terror and the real terror. Especially how it's sort of one came after the other, and then you get to see that, like, I was actually more afraid when it was not the magical terror. the magical terror. So that's a really well directed sequence there, and yeah, I don't want to spoil it too. How about you, John? What's your thoughts?
I like the show a lot, the first episode. I tried to avoid like the trailers to get the feel. I only watched like the first trailer. I didn't watch any other after that. I didn't know they're actually going to show like monsters and whatnot in the episode. I was like really surprised, especially the first scene. I was like, oh wow, this is trippy. That scene of vibrant colors and what's happening to him. And I was like, oh wow, this is interesting. And I agree with everything what Monique and Tony talked about. When there's that scene with the sheriffs and whatnot, yeah, it always has that moment like at the ending of Get Out where you're like questioning what's going to happen, that you're tense up, and then when the actual like monsters show up, I was like, oh, what are they gonna do here? It's like you're like questioning everything about the situation and how certain people will not even help other people even though there's another threat out there. I was like, oh, this is bad. It's like
their racism goes runs deep,
to the point where even there's another threat is like, no, we're still going to be racist. I was like, oh man, like there's no. And then when the things happen to those people, I was like, okay, yeah, you guys deserve that. Every bit of that you guys deserve. I didn't know they're actually going to play with the horror element of this. I know of Lovecraft from like the things that you see of what's his name, Cthulhu. How you say that? The monster.
Cthulhu.
Yeah, yeah, that type or like the gothic art style of Lovecraft. I always see that. I never really like dove in. I actually tried reading a book, and it's hard. Like you said, Tony, like they don't explain a lot. They just you're thrown into a situation, and there's these fish people walking around. I was like, okay, I don't know what's happening. So in my mind, I couldn't like imagine like, oh, what's this? And then watching this, seeing it like just come to life, I was like, oh, man, this is cool. Like every little creature, something a little different than you usually see. The special effects is like really good. I was like really surprised of how well it looked for like just a TV show. I mean, I'm assuming this is going to be HBO's biggest, one of their bigger special effects. Like, you know, how like, what was that? Oh, God, what is that? Game of Thrones with the dragons and whatnot. I really like it. I'm looking forward to tonight's episode. We're recording this on a Sunday, so really, really looking forward to it. I really want to continue the story and see where our characters go. I have no idea what that ending has to be. That was like, what is happening now?
I'm on the same boat as everyone else. I really, really love the show. So full disclosure, I am actually reading the Matt Ruff's book right now. And it's just because I was really interested of what they were doing on the first episode. I think I watched the first episode like probably 3-4 times now. But I was like, I need more at the moment. And I'm reading that, and it's, let's just say that it takes into so many different places that it's actually fascinating what Misha Green's going to do with this television show. And I see hints of it throughout the show, throughout like the episode. I was like, oh, wow, she's going to set it up this way. They're setting up in, like, I could see those hints in the book, from the book. So I'm really fascinated about the audience's response, because we think of the first episode as the horror genre, but I feel like it's going to other genres too, aside from horror. Sci-fi. I mean, there's sci-fi elements that was hinted in the first sequence with Jonathan Majors' character, but I feel like we're going to see a lot of different genres in this television show, which I really appreciate. Like in my mind, I'm pretty sure the way they're probably going to take this television show, like how I feel like an anthology of like genres, but it's going to be one streamlined like plot and story, it seems like. Aside from that, Monique hinted like with the Gordon Parks imagery, but I feel like that whole montage of them traveling to their destination with the James Baldwin speech was one of the most like profound like montage in television this year for me. It's just the way everything came together really well with that. Especially if you know the background about the James Baldwin speech about reality, questioning your reality and whatnot. And then we're basically questioning the character's reality in this television show about like the magical monsters and the real monsters and their reality as like the living in the Black experience in that time. So yeah, I really love the show.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
What's your guys' favorite scene? Like, this is spoilers now.
Okay. We could start with you, with Monique.
My favorite scene actually is what you were just talking about the montage with James Baldwin's speech overlaid over the images, because really, like, one of the horrific things, as Tony was saying, is that there are actual real scares in this show that aren't these magical monsters. Like, the terror, what's more terrifying is how humans are actually treating other humans. And I think that one of the things that the show is trying to point out is that one terror that goes on in America is that there's this gaslighting that goes on within the systems that function in society. I guess you could call it like racial gaslighting, where you're shown these pieces of propaganda, such as the billboard that has the highest standard of living in America, and you see a white family in a beautiful car, yet there's this line of people that are poor trying to catch the bus to go to work, and they can't get any higher because of their race. And you know, it's not any fault of their own. It's just what color their skin is. And also, when when our trio of characters is at the gas station or whatever it is, like the ice cream parlor or whatever it is, and these teenagers are out there making fun of them just because they're Black. And as I wrote in the article, in my article, the scene is showing who is the evil person in this? Like, it's like, who is the actual problem here? It's not the people that are just going about their business being African American. It's the teenager that is like contorting himself to act like a monkey. And it's like, you have that. And then at the same time, within that same scene, as they drive off, as our characters drive off, you see this huge billboard of like an Aunt Jemima character, which again shows how this idea of Blackness as this malleable object, to where on the one hand you can be afraid of them because we say that they're like this, but then on the other hand you can make fun of them because they're supposedly less than white Americans, but then on the other hand they're supposed to take care of white Americans because they have all this maternal love and stuff, and they just love white people and things like that. And so it's like all these ideas that don't make any sense, that are disparate to each other, yet somehow that's the conflated idea of what a Black person in America is supposed to be. And it's a load of gaslighting to on the one hand tell people, such as the people in the poor line or the bus stop line, to say, well, you need to try harder in life, which is what the billboard is basically being like you need to try harder, but yet when you try harder you can't get anywhere because of the color of your skin and how people are looking down on you because of your appearance. And so it's just basically saying how America's a big lie. And and so I mean, I know hopefully it's not offensive to some people that are listening to this, but I mean, it's the truth. I mean, America cannot be truthfully a land of the free and all this stuff if they're still keeping people subjugated, just by, not even in shackles, just like mentally subjugated through this idea of racism. And so that's what the real terror of the show is to me, is that all this can be going on, all these horrible, like, real, well, in the universe, these real awful monsters are there, killing people in the forest, yet you have the actual reality of racism also killing people. And it's like, as Tony said, it's like fighting a war on two fronts. So it's just that scene alone, that whole montage just showed how black people are made to feel like they can't win. But at the same time, they're also made to feel like you're not trying hard enough when the system has been stacked against us from the very beginning.
Yeah, I couldn't put it well better than myself for myself. That sequence is really jarring and pretty profound. How about you, Tony? What's your favorite scene?
I'm going to get to that, but something Monique said really sparked me, and I'd like to address it just quickly. When she spoke of like the racial gaslighting, I loved that, and I think that's the more pernicious part of the equation, to be quite honest. I remember once upon a time I was trying to explain to someone not of the same race that I am, like, what racism is like. And I came upon the analogy of like walking into a spider web. We've all had that where you like don't see it and you walk into a spider web, you know, and then you're like spitting and flailing around and you didn't see it coming. But the funny thing is that that's an experience that we've all had, right? Now, if you look at yourself from outside your body, what everybody else sees is they don't see the spider web and they can't feel it on their face. They just see you flailing around like an idiot. And that's kind of the way that it works. You know, you know something is going on. You can feel something is going on. It's a very real thing, but it's designed in such a way that those who it's not meant for don't see it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting because it also put it in that perspective in the 1950s too, like how that continues till now. Like, there are a lot of images in the television show where you're like, this could just been today and whatnot.
Well, just think about the premiere of Watchmen.
Yeah,
and how that led to so many people googling, like, did the Tulsa race riot, did that actually happen? I'm like, yeah, that's a real thing that happened.
Yeah,
but it's a prime example. But now briefly, my favorite scene is when Journey Smollett is running through the woods to get to the car. Holy cow, man! I was on the edge of my seat, and not for nothing. As a former athlete, I ran a lot of track growing up. Perfect sprint mechanics. Like, she was really running. Like, that was the real deal. So, like, that was everything. That was great.
I think she posted something on social media about that scene where people wanted to know if she was still running. And then I think she was saying that they were running. Oh, she was doing that scene the whole morning because I think they filmed it like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I was like, wow. That lane that she was running seems super long too.
Oh yeah, and it's largely a good part of that scene is one tracking shot. So was not easy. I take my hat off to her.
You know what I appreciate too in that scene, that it's like subtle, is very subtle, is that she never looked back.
Not once.
She kept on going forward to the car, never looked back. How about you, John? What's your favorite scene?
There's many favorite scenes. I would just mention one that got me like kind of like off guard a little bit, only because I didn't know what was happening when I was watching it. Is when they enter a diner, and it's a diner that I guess served black people in the past. So they went inside it and they're like wondering what happened, or not wondering, but they're, you know, sitting and stuff like that. And then the kid basically leaves the counter, and Lita, right? That's her name. Went to go to the bathroom and notice that the kid is on the phone call telling someone, saying like, oh yeah, I'm not serving. I just don't want what happened last time to be here. I was like, what are they talking about? And then you hear them talk about why did the White House is white, basically, and telling you what happened. And I know that story too, but I was like, what are they putting together here? Like, the thing. And then he's looking at the walls white, and then all of a sudden his foot hits accidentally takes off the tile, and you see underneath it got burnt down. I'm assuming the owner either was black or served black people, and that's why they burned it down, and shows like how bad the situation was. And and they basically knew, Lita knew right away, and they got in the car. I was like, man, that's tense. I can't imagine, like, question. They were they knew what something's up, and then they're like in their mind, like that whole part with the White House is like, oh, they're just reminding people like, oh yeah, we did this too, like in the past and whatnot. It's like, oh man, like just that situation, how scared I would be just knowing that you got saved by learning something in history about, you know, yeah. I was like, wow, that's a well put together scene.
Yeah, from that point on, from the diner scene till the sundown scenes and the Lovecraftian creatures, that whole was just a roller coaster of tension. It feels like it's just the way that it was well put together, like the all those scenes together was really put together, well done and whatnot. My favorite scene, I think everyone has said like the best scene so far, so I'm just gonna put something that's hinted, because I'm reading the book, is that the comic book that the daughter makes is a really good hint, I feel like, what will come later on.
I honestly don't remember the comic book. I really don't remember the comic book. Like I knew she did a comic book, but I don't remember the images in my head. Like, I have to rewatch that episode now.
The comic book is based on the mother, and then you actually get to see her in the hero role.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I forgot.
Spoilers, Ben.
The name now. yes. probably minor spoilers. Minor spoilers. But yeah, I think that's it for. Do you guys have anything else to add in our discussion? Nothing.
I was gonna say just briefly. If this is the kind of thing that you dig and you want maybe like a training wheels for Lovecraft, one of his most approachable stories is The Call to Cthulhu. Very cabin in the woods, much more straightforward plot. Also incredibly terrifying. So if you're into that, check out Call to Cthulhu.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for the recommendation. How about you? I think you were going to say something, Monique.
I was going to say that I'm interested to see how the Korean War plays into this. I know Jonathan Majors' character is a Korean War veteran, and Jamie Chung is in this. We don't know much about her character yet, except that when he's having that dream in the beginning, he dreamed of her as the Martian princess. So I haven't read those particular Edgar Rice Burroughs stories about Mars and all that, so I'm not exactly versed on Deja Doris. I think that's the character, but I'm assuming that there must be something in that character that can like shine some light on what Jamie Chung's character is going to bring to this season.
The John Carpenter of Mars, that one. That's the name of the. That's the name of the book, but
it's the movie, Mars? Right? The film.
Yeah.
Okay.
John Carter.
John Carpenter is a director. I'm sorry.
There you go.
He did make a movie with Mars, right? John Carpenter. Is that what you're getting confused, Ben? With Ice Cube,
Ghost of Mars. Yeah, Ghost of Mars. Good catch.
Yes. But yeah, I didn't actually realize that was Jamie King in the Jamie King.
Chung.
No, I forgot her name now. It's Jamie Chung in the red makeup. I didn't realize that, or didn't catch it, or whatsoever. Yeah, but you're right, Monique. They did hint that because when he made like a collect call in Korea, so it will be interesting. Yeah. I just realized that when you just mentioned it right now. There's a lot of little things I noticed that they did with each character that they basically like lay like a foundation, but we'll just get to know what will happen in the next couple episodes, it seems like. I'd say you don't have to read, I don't think you should read Matt Ruff's book. It's a really good book. It's a very like page turner, but I think the show adds a lot more because of Misha Green, and I think they did a really good job at like adapting the book, but the book itself is fascinating, but it's not like you don't get the richness from the show, it seems like. But yeah, I think that's it. So moving on to Monique, where can they find you on the interweb?
You can find me at ColorWebMag or at MoniqueBlog.net on Twitter. You can also go to my website, ColorWebMag.com. It's on Facebook also at ColorWebMag. And the Book of Awesome Black Americans, published by Mango Publishing, is available online at Amazon and at most bookstores. And if you want your indie bookstore to carry the title, then make sure to request it.
I highly recommend the book. I actually bought the book.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. I do love how you lay out the chapters of like in the beginning and whatnot until like the last, I think the last chapter is chapter 8. I didn't read everything yet, but it's one of those books where you could just read everything as like, you know, parts of it here and there.
Right.
There. But it's really well written, and I highly recommend it. Especially you highlight some of the, you know, not well-known black figures in our history, which I really appreciate. But I really recommend it. How about you, Tony? Where can they find you?
You can catch me at Big William Cat on Twitter. You can also listen to our podcast, Get Out the Room, everywhere. Just put it in Google. They'll tell you where to go.
Thank you. I mean, for everyone, like, I think Tony and us, we've known each other for almost like 8 years, it seems like.
Yeah, something like that.
Like the podcast. And I really, really, really recommend their podcast. I know, although it's primarily a horror podcast, you guys talk a lot about other things too.
Yeah, we're broadening the palette.
Yes. How about you, John? Where can they find you?
You can check me out at the most organized Twitter feed of 20XX at Abaya Arts, and subscribe to, I guess, my channel. And my partner and I play games together in our feature called Date Night. So her and I just play games, any type of game. We've been playing a lot of horror games lately, so.
You could find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You could follow us on the Freaking Awesome on Twitter and Instagram at TFA Now, or you would like to engage with us on our Facebook with the Freaking Awesome, or join our Discord server. The link will be in the show's notes. Please subscribe, rate, leave a comment on iTunes or Google Play. And if you want to email us any concerns, comments, or corrections, that's contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. Once again, I want to thank Monique and Tony for being our guests here. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the listeners for listening. And I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
I'm Monique Jones.
And I'm Tony.
And that has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.